Welcome back to another episode of the Bench Mob ENT podcast, the best sports podcast in New Jersey. We have the full squad on back tonight. Four brothers 2.0. How y'all fellas doing?
Doing good.
Good, bro. Excited to get into it, man. A lot going on.
Free agency about to be crazy.
Yeah, it is.
Free agency about to get bananas. Trust and believe. For those that's watching, for those that's listening, we are definitely going to break down free agency, some of the signings that happen. And what is it? The official tampering all that starts Monday, tomorrow, right? Yeah, so it's definitely going to get crazy. Free agency officially starts on Wednesday. So best believe next Thursday, we're going to be talking about it because some people are going to be signed. On this episode, we are touching on Russell Wilson, best spots for him, Kirk Cousins, best suitors for him. GM, we're going to try to fix the Giants this offseason. We're going to try to do that, figure out what he got to do for them to get better this offseason. Is defense overrated in the NBA? All of that and more we will be talking on today's episode. Make sure you subscribe, share, rate, review. Tell any and everybody because we are not trying to be here for a short time. We're not trying to be here for a good time. We're trying to be here for a long time. Getting straight into it. Start off with a quote. Linda Poindexter once said this: go only where you are wanted. Go only when you are needed. Stay only if you are appreciated. The Denver Broncos no longer wanted Russell Wilson. Where is the best fit for Russ to redeem himself?
Well, you're asking me. I'm gonna say the Steelers. Yes, I think that's the best place for him. I think that with their defense that's already in place and their skill position players they have on the roster as it is, he has a great chance to go there and revitalize his career from the jump, right? I think that you don't have to have that much responsibility in terms of dropping back and throwing the ball a million times. They got the kid Jalen Warren. They got, you know, Najee Harris. The O-line, I think they have some money to spend to get better there as well. And certainly draft capital to put towards that. This is the best offensive line draft maybe in the last 10 years, you know, for what everyone talks about. So they have the opportunity to get better and make it such a situation where they can run the ball, run first with Arthur Smith. You know, he wants to do that anyways, run first, play action off of that. And it gives him the opportunity to do what he does best, drop back, scan the field, you know, maybe improvise a little bit, but not have to do too much legwork as well. And they just need someone to be able to get the ball in the hands of Deontay Johnson and George Pickens. And experienced guy like Russell Wilson is certainly able to do that. So I think the Steelers make the most sense. I know I've heard rumors they may like Justin Fields more. We'll see. But I think if they can get their hands on Russell Wilson, they have a chance to be a good team and potentially make a run in the playoffs, win a playoff game at least with him on the roster. So I like him there the most out of any of the situation because they also can't draft a quarterback. So you don't have to worry about getting there and then looking over your shoulder. You know, you can just go there and get, you know, really just set up camp. Play for your veteran minimum, get your $35 million from the Broncos, chill, and go out there and play good football for a great coach and for a really good culture where they win more often than they lose. So I think it's a good situation there for him.
Hey, Chris and Miles, is Russell Wilson, is he a starter still, or Russell needs to come off the bench as a bridge quarterback, helping a young quarterback going forward?
I think he's a starter still. I mean, you look at what he did for the Broncos over the course of this past season, going on that five-game win streak in the middle of the season against teams like beating the Chiefs, you know, beating the Bills. He's shown that he can still play right at a high level, and he's still a competitor. I think that is something that's going to continue to burn inside him. And you heard it recently when he was on the I Am Athlete podcast. He still has a love for the game, right? And he wants to prove doubters wrong and people wrong and show that he can still play at a high level. And I think a lot of us who have, you know, watched Russell for so long want to see that again, right? You know, I hate when quarterbacks fall off like this and they don't look like themselves and right, and their names being dragged through the mud in the media. So I would like him to see, you know, would like to see him, you know, play at a higher level and really be back in that top, you know, 10 quarterback conversation towards the back half of that. I think that'd be exciting for a lot of people, especially people that enjoyed watching him do the crazy things that he did early on in his career, right? All the plays that he made outside of the pocket. You know, he was a little heavier the past 2 years, and it's said that he dropped some weight and he's in shape. So I agree with Greg completely. I think Pittsburgh is a great landing spot for him, but I also think, like, if he went to the Falcons, man, with their wide receiving core that they have and Bijan Robinson in the background, talk about not needing to do much at all, right? He'd be in a situation like Brock Purdy, where you have weapons all around you. You just got to get the ball in their hands and let them do the work after that. And the Falcons got a defense too. You know, they got Jesse Bates, who had a career year last year. But I'm not sure what the interest is from the Falcons side. I heard Kirk Cousins is someone that they're definitely eyeing. You know how I feel about my boy Kirk, Greg. But who knows where he's going to end up. But I think I would watch those two spots, Pittsburgh and Atlanta.
Miles, since he brought it up, because it's been in conversations, especially with Kirk Cousins being one of their top, you know, prospects that they want to bring into Atlanta. Are the Falcons a quarterback away from being back in the playoffs, being a legitimate team in conversation? Because I've been seeing, hey, if they get Kirk, oh my, with the weapons and with the defense, they should be back in that playoff conversation. What's your thoughts on the Falcons in a situation?
I mean, that division is winnable. So if you bring in a quarterback like Kirk Cousins, I mean, Tampa Bay won the division with 9 wins. So I'm pretty sure that they can make the playoffs that way. And then, I mean, anything can happen in the playoffs. But, like, Kirk Cousins is a really good quarterback. I know Minnesota wants him back, and they're waiting to see what he decides tomorrow or in the next couple days. But I don't know. I don't think he's one guy who's going to get you over the hump as far as where the end goal is usually the Super Bowl. I don't think it's to, like, make the playoffs unless you're a team like the Lions, when they hadn't made the playoffs in, like, 30 years. So it should be interesting to see where he goes. I mean, Russell Wilson, he might wait to see where Kirk Cousins goes and then try to figure it out after that. I mean, Minnesota might have to double back and see if he's interested. But, I mean, the Steelers would be the ultimate signing for them. Like, I know they can't feel like going into the season with Kenny Pickett is a good idea, because we already know. I mean, 2 years in, I mean, they should have known he wears gloves. So, I mean, any quarterback wearing gloves, I've never seen them be good at football unless they're playing, like, at recess or something. So I think that's the best place for him at this point. But he might want to go to the NFC. That's why, yeah, the Falcons are a legitimate place for him to go. It's real top-heavy with quarterbacks in the AFC, so he might not want to compete in that aspect.
Kenny Pickett hit that electric slide mid-game and had everybody going crazy. And people put a lot of stock in that, just his athletic ability from that one play. And I think – I'm not going to say the Steelers chose wrong, because I think the ceiling is higher for him, right? And a lot of the talk that's happening now is like, hey, bring in a guy like Russell Wilson to challenge Kenny Pickett for that starting job. Let them have a real quarterback competition. And I was reading some that said that would be like the biggest quarterback competition since Steve Young challenged Joe Montana a long, long time ago. I don't know if I'd go that far and say all that, but it makes sense for a young kid like Kenny Pickett to actually be challenged and fight for a starting job. Cause I think Kenny Pickett would rise to the challenge too, and put in the work to make sure that he's given himself every opportunity to show that, look, I can still play too. You know, I just had a bad, you know, past year. Cause year one, he looked good. He looked pretty good, and the ceiling looked like, you know, he could do something. But that division's tough, man. It's going to be a dogfight. And I think if Russ gets in that division, the Steelers know how to make it work, regardless of who they have at quarterback. They've shown that they can win. So you got guys like Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, and then you add Russell Wilson to that mix, along with Deshaun Watson. If he shows up this year, he didn't look like himself last year. So who knows, man?
I mean, that's exactly what I wanted to ask too. Like, regarding that, let's say Russ does go to the Steelers, what's their ceiling in such a tough division where you got the Ravens, Lamar Jackson MVP, Joe Burrow coming back healthy, and Deshaun Watson seems motivated, seems happy. They made a trade, got him another weapon over there. Is this even the best fit for Russ to try to redeem himself?
You was going to say something, Miles, right?
No, I was going to make fun of the Kenny Pickett thing and just say this is not The Bachelor. We can't just grab him along and, you know, let him play this out. Like, it's already too late. We've seen the tape on him. He's very slow with his decision making. He doesn't push the ball downfield when you have two real good receivers. And now they're going to get rid of Deontay Johnson when they should really keep him. But, they should be kicking the tires on every quarterback out there. Because what is this, the first time Tomlinson hasn't made the playoffs in his time in Pittsburgh?
Like, that should be a real— Didn't they make it? I'm bugging. Didn't they make it?
I don't think they made it.
I might be tweaking.
I don't think this year they made it. Yeah,
they needed
that game against the Bills
to go their way. They needed like the Bills, something needed to go right for them, and it didn't. So
the game against the Bills wasn't a playoff game, and I'm tweaking. It was a game that I guess they needed to get in, win it in type situation or whatever. Maybe like that's what it was.
And essentially, he was benched last year for Mason Rudolph. They wanted him to back him up, and he said, "I'm not doing that." So he was inactive for that game. So I mean, the writing's kind of on the wall. I think they should do what the Patriots just did and kind of jump ship on, because that's what most quarterbacks should do. I mean, not quarterbacks. Most teams should do with quarterbacks that aren't the long-term solution. Like, if you've already seen the tape and you don't believe he's the guy, then go after a veteran or, you know, kind of tank a little bit.
Well, damn. Yeah,
that's or go for Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones is available, so. Probably starter in the league.
And when he isn't available, he won't be available. No boy, he's not. And you know, he's trolling, but yeah, I think the best place for this guy is the Steelers, man. That's the best situation for Russell Wilson. I think it's clear cut. I don't think he's gonna have a bunch of options. I think he only has, you know, really one real option here, for being honest. And that option is going to end up being the Steelers. I think that Kirk Cousins is going to end up going to Atlanta. And that, from what I understand, Russ had a really good meeting with the Steelers. And from everything I saw from like reliable sources, and it went really, really well. They hit it off. So I just think he's going to end up being over there. I think he's going to end up being playing for the Steelers. As far as their ceiling, I mean, they could be a good team. Like I said, win a playoff game. I think they can win a playoff game with him. If it goes the best way it could, I think they could win a playoff game for sure. I think that's certainly in the cards. And that would get him a new contract, that Baker deal. It could get him a Baker deal like that we saw today. So it's the best place for him to go. He'd be insulated with talent. He wouldn't have to overdo anything or have to, you know, overcompensate for lack of talent around him. He can go over there and play good football. So I think that's the best place for him. I really do. If he's smart, he'll end up there.
Hey, get out my notes. Like, again, get out my notes, because the next thing I was going to mention for the next quarter, for those that don't know, don't realize, this is a new format for the Bench Mob. We're doing four quarters and then overtime. Second quarter now, we are touching on Kirk Cousins. Baker Mayfield got a 3-year $100 million contract with $50 million guaranteed, up to $15 million in incentives, $33.3 million per year. Kirk Cousins has already said he is not given a hometown discount. Are we seeing this as the end of the Kirk Cousins Vikings era?
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably. I mean,
yeah.
I feel like they both need to go in separate directions. Like, they had that great year last year, won the division, top two seed in the NFC, I think, or top three. But they just don't have enough. Like, that was their max ceiling right there. And they had to shed a lot of capital in the offseason, and you see what happened. They weren't as good. So I think they're in a rebuilding mode, which is a weird place to be, because you've got the best receiver in football. And he's up for a contract extension, and you're not sure what you're going to do at quarterback. And I'm sure he's thinking about that, because that affects his numbers. That affects if he actually wants to be there, because I'm sure he wants to win. I mean, the stats are nice, but would you want to be like T.O. or would you rather be Jerry Rice? So, I mean, at the end of the day, I think Kirk Cousins is on his way out. He's got to go to Atlanta. He's got to go to one of these other places to kind of maximize his you know, next phase in his career. I mean, there's not much left to do in Minnesota, and I don't understand why he would come back unless they gave him a lot of money. Everybody loves the place they're at currently when they overpay them, but I'm sure he'll love Atlanta a lot more with his chains and all that stuff too.
Ain't yo, you funny for that. Ain't his wife from Georgia too? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, his wife got family over in Atlanta.
Yeah, it's so writing's on the wall, man. He Georgia would be a good fit for him because you know Kirk, he wouldn't live in Atlanta. He'd live about an hour outside of Atlanta, Buford, Alpharetta. He'd be living, you know, that nice cushy, you know, Southern comfort lifestyle, that Southern hospitality. So look, I think that's a great landing spot for him. And I think too, the writing was on the wall when their head coach basically came out and said during the combine, I believe it was, he said, Kirk deserves to be a free agent, right? Kirk deserves to see free agency. You know, obviously we want him back, blah, blah, blah. But once you say that, that just means like you're not willing to give him top dollar or you know, negotiate with him in terms of what he deserves. So let Kirk go be a free agent, see what he can do, see where he lands. And he's coming off that Achilles injury too. I think that's something that people need to remember. He may not look himself right off the bat. And I think that's a big if too. When teams are out here looking to sign Kirk, what is he going to bring and what is he going to be on day one when he comes?
Greg, so you're muted still, but before you break it down for us, within that, because I know you're about to break it down on Kirk,
mm-hmm.
If Kirk leaves, the bigger question is, are we going to see a Justin requesting a trade? Because if, like Miles said, if I'm Justin Jefferson, do I want to be catching balls from a second string, third string quarterback, a rookie quarterback that y'all might get? Russell Wilson may be coming there. Does Justin Jefferson then request a trade?
I think Justin Jefferson might have ended up requesting a trade if he stayed. I think the big thing with Kirk Cousins is, and why I think the Vikings are smart, is why would I allocate all this cap space to a guy who's never, you know, put a team over the hump before, right? Or every time he's in the playoffs, they lose, or, you know, his primetime game record isn't very good. Now, he's a good quarterback. He's a solid quarterback and should be appreciated as a guy who's a really, really high-level bridge quarterback. But that's what he is. He's a bridge quarterback. He's supposed to connect you to the next guy, to your franchise guy. So when I think about that, and I think about, you know, what him wanting top dollar and not taking a hometown discount, what I just heard, which is absurd, coming off of a Achilles injury. I'm not paying him that. I'm not looking to pay him either. I'll let him walk and I'll assess my options. I'll go out there and get a cheaper option, a quarterback, maybe a guy with some upside, like Trey Lance or Justin Fields, and I'll rock out for a year. And we'll see where it goes from there. Even if you trade Justin Jefferson, you still have Jordan Addison. So you'll have a lot of different assets available to you to build a football team for a lot that's good for a long time, right? Outside of the quarterback position until you get one. But with Addison there, Addison's good insurance for Jefferson, which we saw. So, I'm just not allocating that cap to Kirk Cousins. I'm not giving him big dollars because he hasn't proven that he can get you over the hump. Yeah, you can win games with him. He's kind of like Dak. Maybe he's like Diet Dak Prescott, but I'm not paying him big dollars. That he's not winning a Super Bowl, so what's the point? You know what I mean? And I get that not every team can win a Super Bowl, but like I'm not paying you, 40% of the cap space that we have. I'm just not doing it. Not with where he presently is at 35 years old with coming off an Achilles. No way.
Now we have a new segment called Franchise Mode. So anytime we can talk about any team, we can talk about any player, whatever sport it is, we are going to go in franchise mode. We are going to be the GM, the owner, the coach, and try to decide and decipher what this team, what this player should do to get better. First one we have for this new segment is none other than the New York Football Giants. They have the number 6 overall pick as of right now going into the draft in the first round. They are projected to have about $38 million in cap space going into free agency. What is the first thing that comes to mind that needs to be done to help fix these New York football Giants. Just let's say just to even get back into that playoff conversation, which hasn't been that often for them.
Fix the line, get playmakers, get a quarterback. I mean, I'm sure Greg's going to say in the draft they need to look at the quarterbacks. But if I'm the Giants, you got to at the same time, you don't want to be backed into picking the fourth guy. I'm sure you have your top two. And, I mean, you're not going to – you're going to do your due diligence on all four of the top quarterbacks. But if you're stuck with the fourth quarterback, you shouldn't feel like you're forced into taking a quarterback at that point. Take the best playmaker. Take Neighbors or something like that and kind of build out the rest of this roster. Like, I don't think – sure, you can trade up, do that, but I think the top three is set. Like, we already know that they're all going to take quarterbacks at this point. And it's deciphering who's the fourth quarterback. Like, I'm sure you love Drake May, but I don't know if the Giants will love – Jaden Daniels or J.J. McCarthy. They might love Drake May a lot more than those two. And if he's not on the board, why force it? And the line is clear. Like, you need to make changes. Evan Neal, he's locked in, which sucks because he sucks. But if you bring in a guard to help out, I mean, you've got JMS at center. You've got your left tackle for the next 10 years. So it's not the worst position to be in, but like just fixing the playmakers. But you've got some weapons. You got Wandell, Darius Slayton. You got to see what, you know, Darren Waller does if he retires, if he comes back, because that'll eat up a big portion of the – well, not that big of a portion of the cap, but you'll have to figure out the tight end position too. And then on defense, like safety, whether you bring back X or not. I mean, he's a captain on the defense. So usually you don't let like a young 24-year-old safety that's pretty good. He's probably going to get decent safety money on the market. I'm pretty sure the Giants want him back at a price. But, I mean, seeing all these safeties getting released, it's kind of telling me that they're trying to control the safety market. So that might help you bring him back at a lower price. But and then maybe an edge rusher. I mean, Azeez has been banged up a little bit. Kayvon had a great year last year, but you need someone else on the other side of him too. So maybe like a Bryce Huff from the Jets. I mean, it would suck for us to lose him, but he deserves money. I mean, he had a great year last year playing limited snaps. So, I mean, it's not all going to get fixed in one offseason. It's like impossible. That happens so rarely that you've kind of got to build it year by year. So, I mean, I thought that maybe Daboll was on the hot seat, but maybe if he drafts a quarterback and you see some progress, we'll see.
I mean, yeah, you hit a lot of the points on the head. I mean, look, the reality is if the Giants don't draft the quarterback this year, I think everyone gets fired in a year or a year afterward. I think all of them get fired. So they only have themselves to blame because they went out there and won games at the end of the year with Tommy DeVito and told us it was because they can't disrespect the game or because, you know, the guys like need the film and all this stuff and all this BS that no one really cares about. And I guess these guys' livelihoods, I understand that. But, you know, you put your team behind the eight ball because it wasn't a problem for Washington to go out there and lose football games. And they sure as heck did a lot of that on purpose. Some of the games they lost on purpose. But, you know, they're going to pick the second best quarterback in the draft. And you may not get one. So it's the Giants have no one to blame but themselves. But if we're talking about how you're going to build it up from here, you got to hope that the quarterback you like falls. And, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, media narratives out there that Drake May's falling, which I don't fully even believe. You know, I think he can still go top three just because he's just that good. And then, you know, it's like, do you like J.J. McCarthy enough to pick him with a sixth pick? And there's rumors, but I don't know that. I don't think it's true. I would be surprised. I think that if they don't get May, they're not going to go quarterback. So the first order of business is getting a quarterback somehow, some way in this draft, which is going to be hard to do. And again, they made it hard. They made their lives harder in that way. But you go from there. I mean, free agency, you address offensive line. I think the rumors is that they're gonna get an expensive offensive lineman, so they're gonna be shopping at the top of that market, and then they're gonna go and get an edge rusher because Aziz does not play football. He's never available. So they'll do that, like Miles said. And then obviously from there, you try to build to the draft the best way you can. It's going to be tough with the quarterback situation. You can't have Daniel Jones out there playing because he's going to be guaranteed $50 million if he gets hurt. So it's the same situation that Denver was with Russell, where he had the guarantee. So they sat him down. And I think the problem really is that if you play him at all, even early in the season with a guy who's had three neck injuries and an ACL, you really don't know if he's going to make it through the year, so you can't run the risk of him getting hurt in game one and he's guaranteed $50 million. You have $50 million and get dead cap into 2025. That gets you fired. That gets you fired. As a GM, that gets you fired. So they probably don't want to play him and they're not telling anybody. They're telling everybody the opposite, which is what they should do. They should tell you that they think he can still be good and help the team, but they don't want to play Daniel Jones, and we all know it. And so this is why I think that as simple as Miles is making it sound, where it's like, hey, don't force the quarterback pick, it's hard to do that. It's hard to not force the quarterback pick because we all know that if you pick a quarterback in the first round, it buys you time as a GM, as a coach. So because Daboll's had success with other coaches or other quarterbacks in the past and, developing them, a guy like JJ McCarthy, who has physical talent and it was a really good college football player, and clearly he's unselfish, cares about winning. You think you can take a lot of those intangibles and the tangible things like the arm strength and all that stuff, the mobility, and turn him into a really good quarterback. So I think that they'd be willing to do that at six. That's kind of my feeling. I think that them picking a quarterback is extremely likely in the first round because of everything I just told you. It's because of the financial reasons with Daniel Jones and the liability risk that Daniel Jones is for the franchise. And the fact that if Daniel Jones plays and gets hurt, like I said, they're all going to get fired. Like Mara's going to be furious that he has to pay this guy $50 million to not play for them the year after. So I just don't think that they survive if they don't take a quarterback they can groom and develop. And that's why you're going to see them go quarterback in the first round. I really do believe that. I think it's just a matter of time. I think that if Giants fans are trying to talk themselves out of it, you're being delusional. So I think that's the first order of business. Before you can even address the rest of the football team, honestly, you got to get a quarterback that you can develop for all the reasons I just said. And I think that's what they're going to do. That's why I don't think that Neighbors or Dunze is really a real possibility for them. I think if they did take Neighbors like early and they trade back into the back half of the first round, but just be honest with yourself. They're not going to take Penix. Why? The quarterback they have now is already injury prone. Penix has had a million injuries. They're just not going to do it. They're not going to do that. It doesn't make any sense. And then Bo Nix is pretty good. I don't think he's all that. I think there are people who are high on him and all that stuff, but I'm not personally very high on him. And I know personally that Daboll is looking for a guy with the big arm to push the ball down the field because he runs a vertical offensive system. That's what he does. So I really do think that JJ McCarthy is the most realistic option for the Giants. But if Drake May somehow falls past three, then that's what they're gonna go after heavy. So I think Drake May is their guy. I think they probably are, higher on JJ McCarthy than people want to admit, but it's just a tricky thing to walk. But they're gonna go quarterback because of everything I just said with Daniel Jones. It's just the way it's gonna work out.
Now, before we move on from our first time doing our franchise mode, just have to ask you, and anybody else could chime in, Saquon is believed he's not going to be there, right? So Saquon not going to be there, and a name that's popped up, Eckler, was one of the options that they're saying to bring in as a replacement for Saquon. What do you think is the best fit at running back for the Giants this upcoming season? Should they go for another name, or should they try to go through the draft, get a younger running back, cheaper running back? What's your thoughts? Who should they get since Saquon is believed to be out the door?
I'll say this. I have no ties to any of their free agents that are available. Xavier McKinney is all overstated. Yeah, he's a good player. He's solid, but he hasn't done any winning since he's been here. And it's not just his fault. But you're not a part of a winning formula. I've been saying for the longest time that the Giants weren't going to be good again until they got rid of everybody from Gettleman's tenure. Anyone he picked, get rid of him outside of Dexter Lawrence and Andrew Thomas. Those are two cornerstone players, two Pro Bowl guys, two potential gold jacket level player. Those are good players. Like, they're really, really elite players. And a championship gives you a gold jacket. So yeah, maybe, but probably not. But regardless, I think that you talk about, you know, Saquon and the best fit for running back. Saquon, him leaving is a guarantee at this point. I don't see him coming back. I think the running back market will be depressed, and he's not going to get as much money as he wants, but he's not going to take as much as the Giants want to pay him. So if the question was, should they take a veteran running back, like a guy like Eckler or whatever, yeah, they probably should, because we want someone who's been in the NFL before, who can pass block, understands protections, especially if you're going to play a young quarterback, which is what the Giants are going to probably do this year. They're probably going to play a young quarterback one way or another. So you're probably going to want an experienced running back there to be there to call out protections, help them out, pass block, who can step in and make sure that their quarterback doesn't get killed and can help them. And so I think a guy like Eckler makes a lot of sense. I think a guy like Jacobs, if he was getting paid a reasonable amount of money, makes some sense too. Just a veteran to come help out too. So yeah, it makes sense. But at the safety thing, playing safety is like being a running back on offense. Like, those guys aren't getting paid either, because quarterbacks don't throw the ball down the field anymore. All the throws quarterbacks make are at the intermediate and before the sticks. Like, that's all the throws that we make, because quarterbacks can't process, right, a full field reads. It's just the reality. Quarterback play has never been worse than it is right now in the NFL. That's the reality of it. So because of that, safeties, deep half safeties like, you know, Simmons and McKinney and all these guys, Byard, all these guys, they're getting cut because no one's throwing at you anyway. So why do I need to pay you? I can get a guy who's not as good, but it doesn't matter because he's not going to get tested. That part of the field doesn't get tested anymore by quarterback. So, you know, unless you're playing Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen, so you only see that kind of guy once or twice a year. So there's no point in having a great safety on your roster if you're going to ask for $17 million. He's in for a rude awakening, McKinney, as is all of these safeties, and maybe he'll be back because of that. But the reality is, if you watch football, you're seeing that these guys, we don't see deep shots down the field anymore. We don't see whole shots against cover two. We don't see that kind of stuff anymore. So that's the reason why you're seeing these safeties markets be so depreciated. And I don't mind the fact that the Giants are playing hardball with him or Saquon. You don't pay your safety. You don't pay a deep half safety, and you don't pay a running back. The only time you pay a safety is if he can be in the box, be deep half, cover a little bit. If you can do all those things, then you get paid. But if you're a specialist like McKinney is, and McKinney's a good player, but he's more of a deep half safety, that's where he plays best, then you're not paying that guy. And with running back, same level, same thing, same thinking, except even less, even worse for them because of the pounding they take. We obviously know all the reasons why they don't get paid. But for me, I'm not willing to allocate cap space to either of those positions because the Giants have so many other positions of need. They should go get Bryce Huff. They should go get him. They should go get a solidified edge rusher who can help, can be a tandem with Kayvon Thibodeau. That should be their focus, right? And also get Owenu from the whatever his name, from the Patriots. Go get him to play tackle, right, or guard. You gotta allocate your money somewhere else, you know, and that just makes the most sense to make the football team better. So that's the way I look at it.
All right, before we transition to our next quarter, did CJ Miles, did you have any more takes on best running back fits for the Giants?
Sweet. I think if the Bengals release Joe Mixon, which is likely, just because he's due $3 million. And we drafted a running back last year who's going to get a lot of burn this year, and Chase Brown. I think Joe Mixon could be a good fit for them. He's a proven running back. He wouldn't be as expensive as guys like Jacobs, Saquon, Eckler. My question with Eckler is why would Eckler want to go there, right? I understand why it makes sense for the Giants, but why would Eckler want to go there if the Chargers aren't paying him and he's looking to get paid and the Giants aren't paying Saquon? It makes no sense for him to want to go play for the Giants. One, if y'all ain't even got a quarterback, and two, he's not getting paid what he wants. So I don't think that's likely for Eckler to go there.
I think the only reason why I said his name is because he's a veteran on the market, and also because with a guy like Eckler, like I said, all these running backs are going to come to the firm realization that they're not getting paid. No, yeah. They're not going to pay anyone. Like, just because smart teams don't allocate at the running back position. Like that rumor that the Eagles are looking at paying Saquon Barkley. No, they're not. They're not going to pay. They're not going to give that guy $10 million a year. That Howie Roseman's one of the smartest guys. That's his name. If that's the guy who runs the Eagles, I think it is. he's one of the smartest guys in the sport. He don't build a roster like that around Jalen Hurts by being a dummy and paying your running back $10 million. He's not going to do that. I'm telling you, he has zero chance. So none of these guys are going to get paid big dollars. So now you just got to go where it makes sense. I'm not saying for Eckler it makes sense, but you operate under the premise that the Giants are going to have a quarterback, a young quarterback on their roster, one way or another on the roster, by the time the season starts, because they will. They're going to, because they, like I said, you can't throw Daniel Jones out there and he gets hurt. You're going to get fired. You're going to lose your job. It's just a guarantee. You can't be paying that guy $50 million in dead cap into 2025, because the contract itself was already a mistake because of how aggressive the number is. Not because you gave him a contract, but because of how much you're paying him to begin with. Now you're gonna make a mistake even worse. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it don't make any sense. So I think you're really looking at a situation where the Giants will have a young quarterback on the roster they're gonna want to play, and you want a veteran guy next to him that can understand how to, you know, just understand how the league works and understands it can help this guy acclimate himself to the NFL. So yeah, it may not be Eckler, it could be Pollard. I don't know. Pollard's still pretty good. It could be Pollard.
I think Zach Moss too.
Zach Moss is almost a guarantee. Any of the guys who played for the Buffalo Bills before under Dayball is in contention. So Singletary, who had a good year last year but has a fumbling problem, he's in contention. I'd rather pay those guys half of what Saquon makes anyways. The reality is with Saquon is that Saquon's tenure as a New York Giant is vastly overrated. He didn't accomplish anything here, and it's okay. It's not his fault. Like, it was a bad team around him, so I understand that part. Not one player is not going to change everything, but he only had one great year here, one phenomenal year here. That was his rookie year, right? And I think the year we went to the playoffs, he was pretty good, but he's missed games in every year since then. Since that major knee injury, he's never hit a top speed over 21 miles an hour. He's never done it since the ACL. But in that first year here, he was incredible. No one could touch him, right? He looked like Penn State Saquon. He hasn't looked like Penn State Saquon since he was drafted. Since that first year, since the ACL injury he had in Chicago. So I don't want to overrate it. It's not that nostalgic or emotional for me, because all I associate with Saquon Barkley is losing, because that's all they've done. And they shouldn't have picked that guy number two in the first place. Saquon Barkley is, and it's not his fault, he is emblematic of Dave Gettleman's biggest mistake as a GM ever, picking him at two, which is crazy, talking about he's touched by the hand of God. We all touched by the hand of God. That means you go number two overall. Don't make no sense. So I just don't. That's the crazy part about the Saquon thing. I'm not sad seeing him go. He's a good guy. Deserves to win. I hope he goes to the Texans and does good, does well. But if he goes to the Eagles, go to the Cowboys, I'm gonna root against him like hell. That's just the bottom line, right? He's not above that. So that's the way I look at it.
Transitioning, when we look at the game of basketball, each year we've seen it. Offense is at an all-time high. Everybody's getting buckets. Even last year, you look at the Denver Nuggets, the champions, they were 15th in defensive rating. This is kind of a nuanced conversation, and we know a lot of fans love to see a lot of points. But in today's era of basketball, is defense overrated for teams if they want to win a title?
I don't think so. I think that the best teams, the championship level teams, ramp up their defense at the right time every year. And Denver's a good example of that. Denver against Boston the other night, Tatum and Brown couldn't get going because those guys do a great job funneling their offensive players to help. They know all their rotations are sharp. You're right. They're really, really good, and they're on top of their chemistry in terms of the defensive side of the ball. It is really, really good. And so I just think that if you look at NBA teams historically, the best defensive team usually win. The best teams that can rebound really win. The best offensive teams, like you can think of, don't typically win championships, right? And we've seen teams try. We've seen teams try to negate great defense by having a historically great offensive team, and they don't win anything. The Suns didn't win anything without Amari Stoudemire, Steve Nash roster, Sean Marion, all them dudes. Like, they didn't win anything, and they were putting up 120 a night at a time where that was unheard of. So, a pace and space was great for offensive basketball, and it's revolutionized the way we have to play defense now in the NBA, the way people play D. But I think that the best there's still a way to defend that stuff. There's still a way, you know, you can get back, slow the pace of the game down. All right, yeah. In terms of, you know, now, there's so many different defensive concepts, right? Forcing guys to the sideline, forcing guys baseline, right? Using the sideline and baseline as other defenders, right? You see it a lot, and so I still think that defense is a staple in the game. And I think that if you're not a good defensive team, you're not going to win a championship. The Lakers don't make the run they made last year, the improbable run they made last year, without being a great defensive team in the second half of the year. So I think it's still something we're seeing a lot. I think it's still a part of the game. It's going to be a part of the game forever, playing and being a good defensive team. And I think it's actually going to get even more important and become more of prevalent and something that we see more defense, because you got to think about the fact that I've heard that they're going to go to the competition committee in the offseason and they're going to try to change the rules around, right? And make defense, you know, just give defensive players more advantages, right? Being able to maybe hand check a little bit more, right? Add little nuances that help them, because they're a little, because I think they think the fans are a little tired of the offensive explosion in the NBA. And that can change things too. I mean, we've seen Steph Curry struggle. I mean, you got to think about it. Like in that those Cavs series against the Warriors, where that offense looked unstoppable, they were really physical with Steph Curry off the ball, and they allowed it in the finals, right? And he had some really bad games. Steph Curry's only had one great offensive final series. That was against Boston, in my opinion. Not 2015. Not the ones with KD. I think the ones with KD, you saw a little bit more of an explosion from him because you couldn't double team anybody. So, you know, you almost don't want to count that, but you can. But that's my point, right? If you can defend Steph Curry off the ball the way they did, then defense is obviously still very prevalent, right? And man, defense is obviously the moneymaker, right? Teams are playing a little more zone now. Miami's playing zone. They got athletes. But I think man defense and understanding how to rotate, how to – do, you know, use run and jump concepts, right? You know, just be able to throw different things at guys, right? Blitz ball screens, right? Now they're stacking ball screens, right? So now the screener sets a ball screen, and then the screener gets set a screen for right after that. Like they set a screen for the screener. So they're putting a lot of different actions in, but it's still a lot of fun to watch because teams that are adjusting and playing good defense, like as much as offensive basketball is exploding on the scene right now and it's become prevalent, defensive guys are evolving too. Defensive teams are evolving too. So defensive schemes are evolving. So it's just, I think that is always going to be a part of it. That's just my take.
Hey, Miles, your Knicks are the 9th rated defensive team and defensive rating this year. What's your thoughts on defense in this era of basketball and how important it is to winning a championship? Or do you think it's just who can outscore each other?
I mean, I definitely think that's a part of it in the regular season. Like every team is aiming for more points. You get more shooting. That's a goal for mostly every team, especially the Knicks. We need more shooting whenever. But I think the biggest thing is you need guys who can switch. You need guys who can defend multiple positions. So that's one of the reasons we went after OG. We traded for him. He can D1-5 almost. And we have a good defensive team already. So adding him to it, along with Hartenstein, Mitchell Robinson, we've got DiVincenzo, who plays great defense as well. I think it's one of those things where for a team to win, they have to be able to play defense. Because in the playoffs, like defense kind of trumps offense in a way, just because you're not going to hear as many whistles. You're going to need to, you know, slide your feet a little more. So I think for the Knicks, that's our identity. Like for us to win and make a big playoff run, we're going to have to do it on the defensive side. I mean, we do have Brunson, we have Randle, we have guys who can score. But as you saw when we got OG and we had that month-long run where we're shutting teams down, some of the best teams, Minnesota, the Nuggets, I could keep going. I mean, we went 14-2 in that month of January. So I still think defense is important in the NBA, no matter what the offensive numbers and how inflated everything is a little bit these days. But yeah, that's why some people, my dad, he can't even watch it nowadays because he's like, I'll wait till the playoffs when you're not seeing teams score 140-136. And it's like, what type of NBA is this that we've introduced to, like, the youth? Like, it's kind of like what you see with AAU basketball. You're teaching them the wrong stuff. So I'm hopeful that, you know, with us defensively, it builds a trend along the NBA where teams try to, you know, get those switchable forwards or those guards who can D, kind of like Drew Holiday. So I'm optimistic.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued to see. Basically, when it comes time to the playoffs, that's when you're going to be able to get the stops. Are you going to be able to get stops then, timely stops? Do we see any of the teams like back in the day, the Pistons defense or the Spurs defense in their heydays? No. But can you get timely stops when you need it in that fourth quarter? Are you able to put together a string of stops to actually win the game? Championship is going to be needed at some point. And that's where we saw a team like the Kings, offensively one of the greatest teams, they said last year by the numbers, one of the greatest offensive teams ever in NBA history last year was the Sacramento Kings. First round exit. Why? Because they couldn't get any stops. Dallas Mavericks, we've been saying it all year. It's cute. It's beautiful. Kyrie's going, it's exciting. That if you want to watch exciting basketball, you want to be, are you not entertained? Turn on the Dallas Mavericks game. But trust and believe, they're not winning a championship at all. Closing off the show, y'all know we're going to give y'all some sports trivia. You know, we're going to give some this or that, cap of facts, all that good stuff. Starting off with this, Derrick Henry is one of those names that's out there as a free agent running back. The best fit for Derrick Henry is the Ravens, Cowboys, or Eagles. Which one would you choose if you are Derrick Henry and his agent? Where would you have Derrick Henry go?
I think the Ravens. Yeah, I think the Ravens, man. They seem like they're obviously a team that's ascending, right? Meaning they are hitting their stride at the right time at the end of this last season. They've shown that they can put it all together in all phases of the game, you know, on offense, defense, special teams, you name it. And they always have such a dominant run game, or at least these past few years they have. Gus Edwards looked awesome this past year with all the burn he's got, you know, stepping into that role. You know, he had people going crazy in fantasy. You know, the days that I benched him, I had him, and, you know, he'd score two touchdowns, right? But to go to a team like that where you know they got a passing game, you know what Lamar can do with his legs as well, it's going to take a lot of pressure off you as a running back, right? But you know also that with you on that team, they're going to feed you the ball too, especially in goal line situations, because that's exactly what they did with Gus Edwards. And then Gus Edwards would hopefully still be there. I think he's still under contract. So now you got a 1-2 punch in Derrick Henry and Gus Edwards. I think that just makes too much sense. The Cowboys could be a good fit too, but the Cowboys have always been good when they had that 1-2 punch at running back, right? And Tony Pollard, he was all right last year, but man, it's crazy to see that downfall. People were so excited about him at the beginning of the year due to, you know, him, people seeing how well he did when Zeke was there. But when he was that full-time starter, man, it just did not look like the same. And the Cowboys, too, are quick to you know, stop their run game and you know, go to the passing game too early. But, yeah, man, I think for Derrick Henry, I think the Ravens are clearly the best fit.
I think also for Derrick Henry, that'll be the first time that's the best quarterback he'll ever have played with.
Oh, yeah.
Having Derrick Henry going with Lamar Jackson. So I think it's a perfect marriage. They help each other out for sure. Looking at the draft, it is predicted and it is assumed that Marvin Harrison Jr. will be going to the Arizona Cardinals. And it is believed that Malik Nabers will be going to the Chargers. If it is projected correctly that Malik Nabers to the Chargers, Marvin Harrison Jr. to the Cardinals, which is a better situation for the wide receiver?
I'd say Nabers, honestly. I mean, I've seen reports where they're looking to cut some cap for the Chargers, and Keenan Allen, Mike Williams could be on the block. And, I mean, if you trade Mike Williams, well, if you trade Keenan Allen, which you might be able to get like a third, fourth round pick, then Nabers kind of steps in as the number one. So, I mean, and you've seen what Justin Herbert does with his number one, which is Keenan Allen. He, like, feeds him targets uncontrollably. So, I think that would be the best pop spot for either guy. Like Marvin Harrison, if he goes to the Cardinals, that's a good fit. But, I mean, I'm just not that confident in them figuring it out. I'm not sure if they're totally confident in Kyler Murray. Like, we'll see what comes of that. But at least with the Chargers, you know that's your guy for the next 10 to 15 years at least in Justin Herbert. And I believe with Jim Harbaugh there, that's going to change things. He's going to be a better player. He's going to make more plays. Yeah, I think neighbors on that team is dangerous. So that would be a fun pairing right there.
I couldn't agree more. I think Miles hit it right on the head, to be honest with you. I'm going to say everything he just said. So ain't even no point in me getting on my soapbox. You know?
If y'all had to, when we're going to be doing this a little bit more often, adding a little betting aspect, a little gambling aspect, since a lot of y'all like to gamble and lose y'all money, we're going to add it into the show for y'all. If y'all had, and whoever wants to go, all of y'all can go if y'all want. I don't know who's been locked in on NCAA as of yet. I know Miles could at least could answer this. If you had $100, somebody gave you $100 to make a bet on who will win the NCAA men's tourney, how would you split that $100 up? 25 on this team, 15 on this team. How would you split that $100 up?
I would probably do like 70 on UConn to repeat. I mean, that team is just so good. A lot of veterans on that team. They've got Klingman in the post, who's a defensive beast. So they could honestly go back to back, which would be the first time since Joakim Noah and Al Horford did it at Florida. And then I think the rest, I mean, I might sound like a homer, but I put it on Kentucky. Like, they're peaking at the right time. They just beat the number four team in the country yesterday in Tennessee. And they've got a great freshman class in Reed Shepard, Rob Dillingham, who else? DJ Wagner starting to play a little better, coming back from an injury. So I think this team is so deep. They can definitely make another run towards the Final Four. I mean, Cal searching for that second championship with Kentucky. I think this is the best freshman group he's had since maybe Towns was here when you had Devin Booker and all that. So that's how I split it up.
Me, I think Houston's going to win it all. I think Houston is outside of UConn and maybe just right neck and neck with UConn in terms of being the best coach team in the country. I think Samson's done an incredible job over there, and it's been the last few years that he's been doing, you know, building this thing up. But really, now you're seeing it come to fruition with a really good team that can win it all. And they've made runs. I mean, Elite Eight runs, not too, you know, recently and things like that. But I think they have a really good chance to, you know, make a push to the Final Four and get over the hump this year and at least meet UConn at the end of the road. I think they're the best coach team. I love what they're doing. Everything defensively, doing trapping ball screens, heavy, and then their ability to shoot the ball at all positions is great. They play like an NBA team in terms of the style of play, right? They're not really playing through the post as much, getting paint touches, kicking it out for threes. So it's a lot of fun to watch them play because it is more, you know, in line with what we see at the NBA level, which isn't the case for everybody. I mean, you know, UConn could throw the ball down low to Klingman, but they still have shooters all over the place, right? Now, I'm not saying they don't throw the ball down low at all, but they really do attack with their guards. Their guard play has been great. You see Sasser over in Detroit now, right? And he was a Houston guy. And so he just gets guys ready to play at the next level, which is why he got an interview to play to coach for the Bucks. It's not a mistake that happened. It's because he coaches an NBA style in college. And I think that he has a chance to make a real run this year and get one. And I'm excited about that team.
Last segment, and we're going to close off the show. This is great. Great show. Great content. Again, share, like, follow, comment. We are under an hour. We are doing a great job. Shout out to the squad, the four brothers on here. New segment to end off because we want to give the people what they want. We give y'all great content, educational content, smart content. We give good takes. We do our research. But y'all do love hot takes. This is the era of hot takes. So if any of our people on this show have a hot take of any kind, whether it's this era, previously, whatever sport, our new segment to end off the show, Turn Up the Heat. And one thing that was mentioned in the chat this week, Jason Tatum cannot be the best player on a championship team. Yeah. I will let whoever wants to start on that take it away.
I'm skeptical of it. I'm the one who said it. As I'm sure anyone who listens to the podcast with regularity probably knows it was me. But yeah, I mean, I'm skeptical of it. I don't think that Tatum is a 1A guy. I don't think that he's the kind of guy that's going to lead you to a championship and put a team on his back. And with this team, you would think that he wouldn't have to. But unfortunately, with the way that they play, with the way that this team plays, they take a lot of threes, and they're not always going to fall. And the reality is that you're going to need somebody, your best player, right, to step up and make shots. And against Denver, we saw him falter. Against Phoenix the other night, we saw him falter. I know they won in spite of his bad performance in Phoenix. But the moral of the story is, throughout his career, he's had way too many bad performances in big games for me to believe that he's a guy I can count on in the big game to have a big game, right? And they lost a series against Golden State purely because he had a series of bad games, right, where he just did not play well. And so I know he's a young player. It's time for him to get better. And so I'm not saying he can never be that, but he is not. I don't think currently he is. I don't think he is right now. And that's why I don't think they're going to win a championship. I think that this year Denver's in a repeat because Denver's the best team and has the formula defensively and has the best player in Jokic on their team. So and a guy who's battle-tested in Murray at point guard. So, yeah, I just have my doubts about Tatum as a you know, championship-level A guy, like the guy on your team to help you get there. And that's my primary reason why. I think it's a proof in the pudding. If you watch enough, then I'm not crazy for saying that.
I can't argue with that. I mean, as we've seen, this team that the Celtics have and they've built around him and Jaylen Brown has been really good. And that's probably a good reason why you can kind of hide his weaknesses. I mean, I'm not going to say he's like Kevin Durant where it's a lot of pure scoring. And if you ask him to do much else, he might struggle at it. But I mean, he's improved his playmaking a little bit. He still does take some bad shots. And I do think at times Jaylen Brown looks better than him. And that's not what you want out of your best player. I mean, sure, they could be considered 1A and 1B on this team. But, I mean, the person that's never going to get traded from this team, at least how I see it, is Tatum. Because they've seen him come up from a 19-year-old kid when he was banging down low with LeBron James in Game 7 as a rookie and kind of stuff like that. So I don't know. I feel like at some point I want to see him kind of take over games the way, like, I mean, he's always mentioning Kobe, and I'd like to see a little more Kobe-ness out of him. I don't know. I've seen bits and pieces here and there, and he's trying, but I don't know. He's not Kobe. That's kind of clear.
Well, you already know the vibes. If you stay ready, you don't got to get ready. Bench Mob, we out. Before we go, Lonzo Ball has been medically cleared, baby. I love to see it. I look forward to seeing Lonzo back next year. One of my favorite players. I think if Chicago had him, it would be a completely different story. We saw flashes when it was Lonzo Ball there. He was getting DeMar, Zach LaVine, Vucevic, all in the right spots. They looked like a playoff team possibly with Lonzo there. Shout out to him. Shout out to the whole Ball family. But peace. Stay ready.